morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are, when you're listening, welcome to the Monsters and Friends podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to all those cryptids, legends, and lore that don't get the love that their more famous counterparts get. I am your ever-grateful host, Michael Patrick, and I am so glad that you're able to grab a stump, come sit around the campfire, and discover some of the amazing creatures and stories that this beautiful country has to offer. As I said last week, we are no longer sporadically driving around the old country trying to figure out where to go next. Barry and I actually sat down and looked at a map this week. That's right. For you youngsters out there, GPS has always existed. It just used to be on paper. We are experiencing the beautiful countryside, one state at a time, and seeing where the old map takes us. While I love having the English lady or Samuel L. Jackson tell me where to go, there's something kind of freeing about taking a look at a map and trying to figure out where you are and where you can go just based on what's around you and where you've been. It's pretty fun. You should give it a try sometime. It's called orienteering. Try that, kids. Yeah, do geocaching or something without like one of those fancy clicker bobs. Before we dive into this week's adventures, I just wanted to remind you guys of a few small things. Unlike our first season, we're not spending each week focusing on one specific subject. Instead, we've decided that we're going to go ahead and travel the United States and give you a little taste of what each state has to offer. There's so many more interesting stories that we're going to be posting as we move along here. If you head to our website, monstersandfriends.com, there will be some additional information about some other cryptids, legends, and lore that we just didn't get a chance to highlight on the pod. You'll also find some show notes and such on the website too. And like I said last week, it's a process, but I promise it'll be there shortly. Also, as I had mentioned before, the Monsters and Friends podcast has joined a new family in the last few weeks. We are now a member of the Straight Up Strange podcast family, and there are many different podcasts on there that are incredibly fun to listen to. There's a good variety of pods as well, so I would highly encourage heading to straightupstrange.com or checking them out on Twitter at Strange Podcasts. If you also head to the aforementioned website I talked about before, monstersandfriends.com, eventually I will make sure to throw some links up there that connect to the other shows in the family, and it'll give you a little bit more information. There is more exciting stuff and really entertaining things coming down the pipe over the next few weeks. I'm super, super excited to share that with you, but for now, let's get into this week's adventures. This week is another gorgeous one. Early this season, we just kind of drove around and tried to figure out where to go, but as I mentioned, just explaining to Barry that the states aren't the same colors that they are on a globe or one of those kids' map was really, really difficult. Then you get into the navigation, and it just became too much. So we're doing the smart thing this week, and we're simply hopping on Highway 2, and we're going pretty much straight west. We left Maine in our rearview mirror, and this week we're exploring the wonderful Granite State. That's right, this week on the Monsters and Friends podcast, we are in New Hampshire. This state is another kind of a weird one. It's a fairly small state. Like Maine, it's one of the 10 least populated states in the country. Of course, what New Hampshire is mostly known for is a different kind of monster coming here. Every 4 years or so, all of the politicians in the world that want to become president make their way to New Hampshire in order to primary and shake babies and kiss hands and whatever it is that they do here. But that's not all that's happening in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is one of the most forested states in the country. Actually, it's second to be exact, which means lots of amazing hide-and-go-seek places for our cryptid friends to hide. One hiker on the Appalachian Trail once said that he's pretty sure that there are places in New Hampshire where no person has ever even probably set foot. It's an incredibly wild and naturally beautiful land, complete with over 900 lakes and 16 mountain ranges. Talk about a wild state that's just ripe for woodland and water creatures. just waiting to thrive without being disturbed by people. And tonight, we're going to talk about three of them. But first, a word from our sponsors. Dunkin' Donuts. I love you. Welcome back. There's an old saying about keeping a good thing going. If it's working and it seems to be great, just run and dive right in with it. Welp, why should this week be any different than the last three? You know what that means. Lake Monster party time. But this lake monster may be more than one lake monster, or it may not even really be a lake monster at all. But we'll get more into that in just a minute here. Tonight's first exploration takes us to southern New Hampshire near a little town called Dublin. That's right, we're going to take a peek at the Dublin Lake Monster, or monsters. The reason we might go with monsters is because there's a few different versions of this fellow, or fellas, or whatever it is. But before we dive into what it is, let's take a look at the lake first because, well, it's not really very big. In a lot of places, it's actually referred to as Dublin Pond, so that kind of shows you the size it has to it. It's a touch under 250 acres, and it's not a very deep lake, at least not in the realm of a lake monster lake. The average depth seems to be a little over 60 feet deep, but there are some spots that can get down to about 100 feet. There's not a lot of boat traffic in Dublin Lake either, so if I was a lake monster, it seemed like a pretty good place to call home, right? Well, the Dublin Lake Monster isn't exactly your run-of-the-mill lake monster. What exactly is the Dublin Lake Monster, you're asking yourself? Well, the story goes something like this. In the early 80s, there was a gentleman that was a scuba diver that normally frequented Dublin Lake. He liked it because of its varying depths, and it was a pretty good dive. One day, the man pushed himself to get down a bit deeper, but there was an issue. That issue? He didn't come back up. A search party was launched, and they just couldn't find anything. However, a few days later, the man was found a good distance away from where he was last spotted. The key difference here is that when he was found, he was lying on the beach, bare butt naked, and fairly disoriented. When he was found by some boaters, he was rambling and babbling what seemed like nonsense. He was going on and on about some sort of eel-like monsters that he had seen deep inside the cold lake. He claimed that he was in a cave and these things were all around him. Many people just broke this off though as him having some sort of hypothermic response to diving in the cold spring-fed lake. But he seemingly wasn't the only one that had an encounter with these creatures either. There was another diver that was using a diving bell. He used it to keep an air pocket available so that he could explore the bottom of the lake. A diving bell is a really interesting thing where you don't need an oxygen tank like a scuba diver would, so you just keep an air pocket and as you descend, that air pocket stays at the top of that bell. You can pick your head up and you can go in there and get a deep breath and get some fresh air. So he was using one of these. He couldn't get all the way down to the bottom of the lake. It's about 100 feet deep or so while he was down there, but unfortunately for him, the bell didn't reach the bottom of the lake where he wanted to go. Instead, it went down to about 80 feet and just kind of hovered there. He decided that this was close enough and the extra 20 feet shouldn't be something too difficult for him. As he descended, he happened upon some caves and decided to go all Indiana Jones and see if he could find anything other than some crappy aliens inside. Well, he did. Like his predecessor, he disappeared and wasn't seen for a few days. He turned up a few days later again, but this time, he was a bit deeper into the woods. He wasn't right on the lake shore. He was also naked and babbling and rambling about Lord knows what. When he was questioned, he was talking about weird creatures that lived in the caves and the caverns below Dublin Lake that had air pockets so that they could breathe. He discovered them and then, well, who knows? He rambled and yelled and ended up being institutionalized because, well, he had gone all cotton-headed ninny-muggins and done lost his mind. That's the sad thing about all this. According to the story, both men were just so traumatized by this that they ended up either being put into a mental hospital or just secluded themselves so much that no one ever got the entire story of what happened on Dublin Lake. The first man gave a bit of a description, but the second, nothing. I hope they're okay if they exist, but either way, draw a picture or something, you know? I don't know. It makes you wonder if there's a man or a group of men babbling inside of a group home somewhere about some eel creatures or whatever it is that they saw deep down there in that lake, and no one is listening because, well, he's been labeled insane. The whole thing does bring up a fairly valid point, though. The lake isn't super big, and I get that. As recently as 2017, divers have been on record as going down to try and find this lake monster. This lake is also pretty popular in general for diving, as one dive master said. If you can take the cold temperatures and horrible visibility of diving Dublin, you can dive anywhere. There are underwater caverns and caves here, but are they anything more than just a natural feature? One of the biggest issues with this whole story is that there's a huge lack of evidence. There's no report of any divers going missing, there's no documented description of the creatures or what exactly these men experienced. Or are there? Like I said, the story says that these gentlemen were so scared by their encounters that they were simply locked up in a mental ward. Would you take record of someone mumbling about weird eel-like reptilians living beneath your local lake? Especially in the 80s, I'd imagine not. All we do know is that this is quite an amazing tale that takes the imagination by storm. Just think of it. Weird reptilian eel thingies that are obsessed with the latest fashions and diving equipment that lure you to the bottom of the lake and then ditch you nude on the beach. What more fun could you possibly ask for? You know, actually, when putting it that way, I could probably imagine much, much more. Let's dry off a bit and head away from our aquatic ambassador for the week. When looking online for who to look out for in New Hampshire, there was one that really stuck out. New Hampshire is a Bigfoot hotspot. There are a lot of sightings that happen here, and probably for a good reason. As we stated, it's a very forested state that provides a lot of great shelter, hiding spots, and I'm going to assume hidden discos only for big feet. The thing is, though, that sometimes even cryptids can get mistaken for other cryptids. What the heck am I talking about? Well, now we're heading north from Dublin Lake to the forests of Coos County to find out. We're going to go ahead and we're going to search for the legendary wood devils. You know how a lot of the time when you're in the woods, especially alone, you get the feeling that something or somebody is watching you? I'd imagine that more often than not, it's a deer wondering why there's water shooting out of my special purpose, but in some cases, it may be something a whole lot more terrifying. I want you to imagine something for a moment. Think of Slenderman, you know, the creature that's become internet famous, that's tall and skinny, with pale skin and has no face. He wears a suit with a little bow tie, and it's just, ugh. Now, imagine that I took Slenderman and that I superimposed it onto a Bigfoot. Can't quite picture it? Okay, try this one. Imagine a creature that's somewhere between 7 and 8 feet tall. It's hairy, but unlike our normal Squatch, the hair is gray, ranging from light to dark, presumably based on the creature's age and sex. But here's where the difference is. Bigfoot is usually a pretty bulky, menacing creature that would probably set off the lunk alarm at Planet Fitness. The wood devils are remarkably skinny, about half the size of a Bigfoot in a lot of cases. Their faces are also described as not being human-like at all. Though a dozen or so encounters that I read about, the only thing that they said about their face is that it wasn't human, so it makes you wonder, what did it really look like? Does it look like a monkey, a dog, who knows? They're also described as being very fast and nimble. They can run through the woods at fast speeds and get away from humans or whatever is near them. They're super shy too, and they hate interactions with people. I can totally relate, friend. Not only are they very fast though, their primary means of staying the heck away from us seems to be that they stand perfectly still. They'll try and stand against a tree and blend in, and if possible, they will move around to the opposite side of it to keep the tree between you and them. There have been reports of encounters with this creature that say you can almost walk into them before you realize that it's something a little bit weird and different. A few encounters actually mentioned that when the creature knew escape wasn't possible, it would just stand there, totally still. And if you continued to approach it, it would let out a terrible scream and then run away. What a weirdo. It's like it's my kids. On the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization website, there's an encounter that two hunters had in New Hampshire during November of 2004. In the report, it says, right before the time came for us to load our rifles, we noticed a strange noise about 100 yards ahead of us. It was almost like a high-pitched yell or squeal. We looked over, and walking from behind a bush, we saw a dark figure that stood about 6 or 7 feet tall, with a long, pointy head. Me and my grandfather had stood there in awe. We had never seen anything like it out in 25 years of hunting in that area. We were very frightened by the creature, so we did not attempt to get any closer, but we watched it walk away as he hiked down the ridge. We were in shock. After he was out of sight, we waited about 10 minutes to collect our thoughts and decide whether what we just saw was real or if the cold was getting to us. To prove we hadn't lost our minds, we decided to go see if the creature had left any footprints. Guess what? It did. We walked over to where we had the Bigfoot pass through, and there were footprints approximately 15 to 18 inches long with a stride of about 4 to 6 feet. There's no way any human could have made those impressions. In 1991, there was an account near the Androscoggin River where a man was walking through the woods. As he walked, he kept hearing twigs and branches snapping and rustling behind him. Of course, like any rational person, he assumed it was any number of small animals running or tromping through the woods. However, as he walked further, it kept happening, and a few times it would get close to him and then just stop. At one point, he turned around and he looked closer, and behind him he noticed a tall, thin gray figure moving from tree to tree. It had a hairy head poking out from behind them to see what the man was doing. Truth be told, I think that sounds pretty terrible. But it mostly sounds like the wood devils are more curious than anything. They're not looking to harm anyone, but rather just see what they're doing as they walk through their woods. Apparently, near the early 1900s, it was more common to see them further south in New Hampshire as well. As the 20th century progressed, however, they smartened up and realized that while man isn't really impeding on all of their land, they're coming close enough that most sightings nowadays happen in North New Hampshire, with a lot of these sightings happening in and around Coos County. With the Appalachian Trail going through New Hampshire and the amount of people that hike it, I'd assume the Wood Devils have seen enough people that they don't want to tempt their fate. What are they? Most chalk them up to being a Bigfoot, but let's be real though. If it was a Bigfoot, they'd be described quite a bit differently. They have that big hulking body type that we've all come to know and love. Maybe it's just the trick that our minds play on us in the woods. You know, how you always seem like someone is watching you out there. And the human mind is really, really good about convincing itself that somebody is out there watching us. It's the same reason that when my family is away for the night, all of the lights in the house stay on and I sleep with the TV on. You know what? Don't judge me. You do it too. It does seem, though, that it's very plausible that another creature calls the dense forests of New Hampshire home, though it isn't a Bigfoot. Not every dog is a beagle, and not every fish is a shark. There's a good chance that this creature is in the Sasquatch category, but it isn't what we traditionally think of when we're talking about a Bigfoot. What I do know, though, is that if you're hiking through the woods of New Hampshire, and you feel like you're being watched, odds are you probably are. Be careful though. If you look around too much and don't pay attention to where you're going, you may just end up bumping into our old friend, the Wood Devil. And finally, we're going to explore New Hampshire's affinity for naming things after the devil. Well, kind of. This last cryptid is a bit of a traveler, it would seem. There have been sightings of this fella all over the country, but it seems that the Appalachians are a favorite dwelling spot of it. The last cryptid we're going to be searching for in New Hampshire is the legendary Devil Monkey. Again, like the Wood Devils, a lot of folks attribute this to just another branch of the Sasquatch/Bigfoot family tree, but when you look at them, they're entirely different. The Devil Monkeys are known to range in size, probably again due to their sex and age. They've been described as being somewhere between 3 and 8 feet tall with a snout that looks reminiscent of a baboon, or it's been described by some as kind of like a dog. It's also said to have dark black hair with white hair reaching from its neck to its belly, kind of like some dogs might have. They also have pointed ears with razor sharp claws and not very friendly looking teeth. To boot, they don't seem to be very even tempered either. All in all, not very fun to invite to your Memorial Day barbecue. They'll eat all of your food, and then they'll probably eat your dog as well. There have been tales of devil monkeys living in the Appalachians since the 1950s, and in some cases even a little bit before. There's been accounts of random encounters where people hear their howls in the night coming from the distance. Family pets have gone missing, and livestock have been found completely shredded and snacked upon in the fields where they call home. They're incredibly powerful as well. They're able to rip animals to shreds as well as being able to run across a field in just a few short leaps. It's incredible how they're described and even more terrifying than most of the other cryptids we see out there. Most just want to live and be left alone, but these devil monkeys, they absolutely seem to have no qualms about opening a can of whoop butt and then dishing it out and then eating the damn can. These most definitely are not creatures that you would want to run across in the wild. They're not seen very frequently, but the two things that most often are experienced are the death that they can leave behind or their terrible screeching that comes from the woods at night. Sightings generally occur outside of city limits, but occasionally they've been known to venture into town. The most notable time this happened was in the late summer and early fall of 2001. In the town of Danville, New Hampshire, they had a string of devil monkey sightings that were a bit different than the normal experience. In August of that year, Fire Chief David Kimball was driving down a road in the town when he saw something jump into the road ahead of his truck. He slammed on his brakes and he looked to see what it was. He saw what he described as a monkey with dark brown hair with kind of a red hue to it. It measured about 8 feet from head to tail, and it was powerful enough that it hopped only twice. Once to jump down into the road and a second time to get away from the scene. He sat there in disbelief trying to figure out what he had just seen. And he wasn't alone either. 11 other people had seen this creature as well. A few days later, he was watching a program on TV, and he saw what was a humble woolly monkey, and he thought that it looked very similar to what he had seen. That's a very different looking monkey though. In the show notes, I'll make sure to link a picture of the humble woolly monkey, and you'll definitely notice the difference. A local resident named Vivian Wicker also claimed that a few nights later, she heard the monkey howling in the woods. She said, "It wasn't a sound that I have ever heard in my woods. When you live somewhere, you get to know the noises and the sounds and everything else that's around you. So I trust Miss Wicker." If you've ever heard a monkey howling as well, it's a pretty distinctive noise. It's not something that you can mix up with a lot of other things. Another fun story to this is that a little boy told his mother that he had left out some peanut butter cookies for his new friend. In the morning, they were gone when he went to check, and no one really knew what to think. Mom just imagined that it was a good old imaginary friend. Honestly, there's no saying it was definitely a devil monkey, but I mean, it could have just as easily have been a raccoon or a possum or any number of creatures. But when they went and they thought about it, they thought maybe this young man had encountered a devil monkey. For about 2 weeks, there were various sightings, but for the most part, people just heard the thing in the woods calling out in the wilderness. Obviously, with the other events in the fall of 2001, this wasn't really a story that stayed in the national spotlight very long. It went pretty quickly due to the events of 9/11, but it's still an incredibly strange and intriguing story. Reports of devil monkeys happen all over the United States, but a lot have been kept in that Appalachian area. There were reports in Virginia of a creature attacking cars, animals, and livestock, and it actually attacked two nurses driving home from a shift one night. Sightings have stretched from New Hampshire all the way down to Louisiana. I guess the one bit of good news to come out of the New Hampshire encounters, though, is that the creature didn't manage to really harm anyone. The two nurses in Virginia had their car attacked, and they reported that the top of their convertible was actually ripped off. The only victim in New Hampshire was some poor peanut butter cookies. It's lucky. After those two tenuous weeks, though, in 2001, things have quieted down a lot, as in, there's been some anecdotal stories and maybe some noises, but there's nothing with any real substance. It could have been a lot worse than it apparently was, but that leads to the obvious question. What in the Sam Hill was it? Well, there are a few theories going around when talking about this. The most popular seems to be that this was some sort of escaped pet that got out of their home. It managed to make its way into town, hop and bound around, and cause a little bit of panic. But, I mean, let's be real here. Who in their right mind would keep an 8-foot monkey in their home at all? Hello? I have a death wish. I mean, some lady got her face ripped off by her pet chimp a number of years ago. And this thing was large and dark and could bound into and out of a road in 2 jumps? No thanks. I'm going to go ahead and call bunk on that one. Next, we have the escaped zoo animal theory. Once again, I feel as if that'd probably be pretty notable, no? I can't imagine a zoo having one of these escape and then being like, oh well, George is gone again. He's just looking for the man in the yellow hat. So, yeah, again, no. Not very plausible. Then there's always the old reliable misidentification category. I saw one theory that this was simply a raccoon. Holy crap. If that's a raccoon, I am definitely not going anywhere in New Hampshire ever again. Honestly, in my brain, this one absolutely makes sense. Monkeys can travel quite a distance, and this guy or these guys or whatever seem to be no different. They have a ton of cover in the Appalachians, so why not cruise up and down the eastern seaboard? I mean, have you seen, Planet of the Apes? They built like a whole city in the woods. And I know that's not real, but I mean, just think of it. There's so much space out there for them to create their own little environment. Why couldn't this be real? I will say, though, that the New Hampshire devil monkey does seem a bit uncharacteristic in terms of, you know, not ripping anything apart, but we don't know what it did in its free time. Maybe it did destroy and rip apart a lot of different animals. We weren't there, and we weren't its friends, so we have no idea. But, as I always say, isn't it fun to imagine? There are so many different creatures out there in this world. Not to mention we have so much uninhabited land out there. For as many people live in the US, we have a lot of open space that a devil monkey or a wood devil could easily call home. And, spoiler alert, we're land dwellers, so who knows what really lies beneath the ocean and lakes of our country? We could chart the bottom all we want, but there will always be little nooks and crannies that we don't see, or that we just dismiss. There is a chance that this is all happenstance and just urban legend. But there's also a chance that all three of these stories are real and somewhat terrifying. It's hard to tell and differentiate sometimes. Some people will take it on its face, and there are others that will just say it's bunk. The final decision comes down to you, the listener. Use the facts that I show, do some Googling, read a book, and then decide. Some of it's anecdotal and some of it's real. How many of you have seen $1 million in person? How do we know it's real? Because somebody said it was? Because other people tell you that they've seen it? We've seen the patty tape of Bigfoot walking, but we don't believe it because it doesn't fit our narrative. Who cares? Believe what you believe, and let others believe what they want to believe. Either way, I'm going to be back week in and week out to share some more of these amazing stories of the cryptids, legends and lore that every state has to offer. This trip has honestly been a ton of fun. Chilling on the rocks by the ocean, looking at the stars, debating documentaries with Barry, which, by the way, he said he's doing his own podcast and he'll tell you about it later. Apparently it's about all the documentaries that he's seen. I'm sure it'll be wonderful, but what is wonderful is being able to come into your ears and tell you about our adventures. But with that being said, that's all we have for the great state of New Hampshire. Don't worry though, really, don't be sad. We'll be back next week with another road trip and story time telling heck of a good time. In the meantime, make sure to check out some of our older episodes. If you haven't heard them yet, listen for the first time. If you have, listen again. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Aunt Marcy's Jamblin' Ramblin' Pod Player, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and basically wherever you get your podcasts. The best thing that you can do to help out the pod also is to subscribe. Hit that little subscribe button and you'll get every new show that's out sent directly to your face. Isn't that amazing? You can also rate and review, but I'd rather you just subscribe. It makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Not only that, you can also chat with us. How? Well, I'll tell you. Head on over to Twitter and give us a follow at MNFPod. You can check us out on Instagram at Monsters and Friends, or look for us on Facebook and give us a follow on there. Just search Monsters and Friends Podcast and voila, there we are. Also, don't forget to check out the website at monstersandfriends.com and watch the stuff start to flow in. Lastly, don't forget to check out the Straight Up Strange Podcast Network. There's lots of really great podcasts on there that range from real-life stories to cryptids to real-life monsters. So head on over to straightupstrange.com or give us a follow at Strange Podcasts. I think it's time to put out the fire here and hit the sack. So thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll chat again real soon.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.